Welcome back to the Layover Podcast. This is episode 4. Whew. Getting into it. The state of the game is that, as you've just seen, Ben and Adam are doing Dune.
We're doing it.
And we are doing... What are we doing? We're doing, I don't know, Canberra.
We're doing the Canberra speed run. This is one of my favorite episodes so far. I think it's got a lot of action in this one.
It does. And personally, I liked being in Canberra myself because... It definitely has like a different feel than, you know, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, like the big cities. It's hard to know how much of that comes through on camera, but like, it's such a strange place in a way because it's like a small town cosplaying as a big city. I mean, Toby, you've lived there. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I would kind of describe it as saying a lot of the people who live there are either in politics or the public service or at the big university, ANU. So there's these two big industries in Canberra. And people also live there who do all sorts of other things. But the university, the parliament and the public service are such a big part of the city that you feel it in everything there. And it's very much part of the culture, part of the vibe. And we liked it, I think, because it was... in some sense walkable to get to the challenge locations that we did, not to get back to the airport, of course, or back to the bus exchange, but at least a lot of the challenges we did were in walking distance. So that felt nice for us over the course of this day.
It was walkable because it was small, but incredibly car-centric design.
Not because of design, just because of the logistics of the size, yeah.
Yeah. I also found it interesting myself, being from Washington, D.C., going to Canberra. I've been before, but like similar kind of vibes in that it was a planned capital, just like Washington, D.C. It has like a bit of a big like mall thing in front of, in that case, Parliament. But of course, similar to like in D.C., it's in front of like the Capitol, effectively the equivalent. And like, I have to imagine there were some inspirations taken from D.C. And also like very much like the downtown, or at least kind of like the businessy area, had like the same vibes as like downtown D.C., in terms of like, you know, you see like the lobbyists walking around and you see the government people walking around and you see all these government facilities. So it definitely felt weirdly similar to DC for me. But anyways, we should acknowledge Adam and Ben.
Oh, they're here too?
Yeah. We're here.
Hello.
Hey guys, we're here on the podcast.
We're back on the podcast and we're doing Dune.
Did you see, I think Adam was trying to mention this last episode, but that we are now being covered by a second much more famous podcast this season.
Yes, this is what I was going to say.
You were going to say this,
when
yeah.
We decided to move on last episode, yeah. Is that we are now not the only Jet Lag the Game recap podcast. Apparently, one of the like most popular Survivor recap podcasts has decided to do weekly recaps of Jet Lag the Game. And I'm almost positive that that podcast has more listenership than our podcast.
Yeah.
So we're now the second most successful Jet Lag the Game recap podcast.
It does seem that
way. It's true. We cannot actually anymore claim that we are the number one Jet Lag the Game recap podcast, but a strong number two.
That's tough.
I can be proud of that.
Okay.
Might have to check out this other one. Sounds good.
What is it called?
It's called...
That's a great name.
No, we actually shouldn't say on this podcast what it's called, because what if people go listen to it, they like it better?
Oh, yeah, no, bleep that. Bleep
yeah,
that,
we're competitors.
Yeah,
we are competitors.
I'm not plugging them. No, they seem to be nice people who host it.
It's like a whole podcast network. They have like podcasts for all the different like big reality shows.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, they posted today.
No, they were very nice. They were very complimentary of the show. It was cool, actually, to hear like Amazing Race and like Survivor super fans like analyze our show like sort of from that knowledge base and perspective. I thought it was neat.
Oh, he has 130,000 subscribers.
Yeah, I know.
On YouTube.
On YouTube, yeah.
Which for a podcast is crazy.
For a podcast, yeah. I mean, that's just on YouTube. I don't even know how many people listen to it on like the actual podcast apps. Mm.
If they say nice things about us, we can be nice to them.
That's not true.
They're competitors, Toby.
We're number two, so it's punching up.
I'm pretty sure that the lady said she's rooting for you and Sam.
Nice.
So.
Oh, in that case... The podcast is called Rob Has a Podcast. Probably way more balanced opinions on there than on here. Way more rational opinions.
Fair and balanced.
Yeah. Gotta give that a listen. Anyways. Okay. The flags. You nailed it. 100%. It was never in question.
I loved this challenge. This was such an awesome challenge, especially because we got it right. But the thing is, I really did memorize every single flag, internalized to the point where for the next 2 days after this, you and I, Sam, were like at airports and we'd see the flag of a plane going past and you'd be like, oh, that's Sri Lanka. I know, because it was one of my flags.
Yep. Well, Sri Lanka was a special...
Wait, I want to test you now. I'm going to show you a flag.
Oh, no, no, no. I said for 2 days, no, not guarantees. For 3 months.
Yeah, remember, it's flags that are represented...
No, 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 no. Oh, that's Brunei. That's Brunei.
Yeah, that's Brunei. Brunei. Yeah.
She's pretty good.
There you go.
That was one of yours, right?
I know that one because it's Brunei and it's got white on like the eye area of like that silhouette. And so it's like Brunei, like with your eyes. That's how it...
One of my favorite pieces of editing, which Ben did, it's not even a piece of editing, it's just a thing that you said, is that you are like giving this beautiful thing of like, all these devices and like, I memorized this because it's like this and all this thing. And then Sam just goes, I just kind of memorized them. And then it's like a hard cut.
Which is true.
I like that. That was a great line.
It's so funny. There's also a line that you have that I love. I just love your intonation so much when you say it, where you go, that, my friends, is Colombia.
Yeah. I think Sam and I accidentally say funny things sometimes without trying. I don't know.
Never intentionally. We're not funny enough for that. We're not competent enough for that, right?
Yeah. What I mean is that that really was my approach, and Sam's approach really was just, I will just, you know, do it. You know, I won't use any fancy nonsense. I will just hardcore memorize these.
Well, this was kind of like the best way to memorize something in that, like, there was a physical element, there was a visual element, and there was a order element.
Yeah.
So like those things all really help you memorize. And like literally like moving through the space and remembering like, okay, I'm around the seas. This is like the seas zone or something, mm-hmm. was helpful. And I personally am actually quite poor at memorizing things. So I was surprised at how easy this was for me. It certainly took some time, but you know, I was also able to get to 100% and I was nervous going into it, even with the alphabetization.
Well, because you never know if your brain is just gonna totally stall out, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, I love that challenge, one of my favorites. Also, it was a lovely evening in Canberra. Yeah. Wind was blowing, the sun was setting. We were just looking at some flags, looking like maniacs, etc.
Credit to Amy Muller, who found that flag display
and suggested
doing a memorization challenge there.
Very true.
Nice. One of my favorites.
Although the original version of that challenge was that you had to memorize and recite all 110 of them.
We would have gotten it.
We would have gotten it.
No, I know you would have, but I wouldn't have wanted to cut it together.
Yeah, that would have been bad content. Anyways, y'all, actually, here's some setup. Toby and I remember when we were doing kind of the balancing on challenges, we were not convinced that it would be easy to make a cart go 30 feet. And we were completely wrong. Hmm.
I seem to recall you telling me that Toby specifically was convinced it was impossible.
Well, that's true. I was trying not to put too much on Toby, but you know.
Well, I'll tell you this. When I watched the cut of this, I realized that I had a completely different expectation of this challenge than you guys. I guess you had written in the rules a 1 foot car, but I had just instantly interpreted as being one of those little like matchbox cars.
Mm. Oh, like a Pinewood Derby
car. Like the Pinewood Derby cars. And the Pinewood Derby cars, I was like thinking, that's kind of like a foot or less. I was just thinking of making a 1 foot long Pinewood Derby car. And I was like, oh, that'll never go like 30 feet. And I just never thought that you meant a cubic foot, you know, like a foot by a foot. I just never thought that's what you meant. So yeah, I was surprised to see this
one. Gotta read the fine print.
Yeah. I was also personally surprised at how like beefy of wheels and stuff you were able to fit on. And also just like my concern thinking about it in advance had been like just mass. Like in order for something to get the inertia to go 30 feet, it needs a lot of mass.
Yeah.
And like looking at it now, it's clear that like, yeah, that was never in question once you built it.
Yeah.
But I guess I had not in advance thought it was maybe possible to find all those materials and build in such a chunky, but you know, dense thing.
I mean, I will say the risk was less that it wouldn't get far enough and more that it would veer off to a side right. and like curve
yeah.
around.
Yeah, or if it tipped over, yeah. then that would have been
Yeah, exactly.
It.
If it fell over or if it curved, like that was really the concern.
Yeah.
And because we wrote the challenge such that you couldn't practice, we had no idea how it was going to ride.
The other thing that I had been skeptical or nervous about when we were evaluating this challenge originally and assigning a value to it was how much asphalt would be available.
Sure.
Because like what y'all found was great mm-hmm. in that it was a wide, super, super smooth
yes.
piece of asphalt. But I was worried that you might only have like, narrow, cracked up sidewalks or something. Because, like, again, it is a public road, the circuit. So you can't really just like go into the middle of that, or at least very reliably. So it did happen that, of course, you had really, I'd say, similar things on both sides here, where like our challenge ended up being close to, I think, the easiest version of it. And same with y'all's, given the uncertainties that, you know, we couldn't really know in advance.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So next we sleep. And that was nice.
Night, night.
I had one of the best fried chicken sandwiches that I've ever had outside the U.S. in Canberra.
Really?
Yeah. And I think why you're surprised, Adam, is like that is a thing that the U.S. has the rest of the world beat.
Big time.
Consistently on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one, it's a bit of a chain.
Although I will say I had a good one in Switzerland the night before we played hide and seek. At that little Christmas market, I had a pretty good fried chicken sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Not better than ones you can get in America, but still a good one.
I will shout this place out because Australians, I think, will know of it because I think it is a chain. Oh, what is it? What is it? What is it? Oh, Betty's Burgers. Toby, you knew this place, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That is a chain. That's in quite a few cities. Yeah, it's a nice little place.
It was a good fried chicken sandwich. And the people were lovely. I remember because I went in like 10 minutes before closing, and they were still lovely.
That night, what happened to me was that I ordered something on Uber Eats. I don't remember what.
We both had Nando's.
Oh, yeah. I ordered Nando's on Uber Eats, and it got there like 2 hours late.
Yeah. I went to Nando's.
Oh, my God. I've had a couple of times like that. When that happens during jet lags,
one of the worst things that can happen.
That's like the closest I feel to like wanting to commit homicide.
Yeah, because you just want to sleep. You're so desperate to sleep, but you have to eat.
You just want to sleep and you want to eat.
Yeah.
And like the Uber app makes it so annoying.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, oh, it's still coming. You can't cancel. But no, I see the guy's not moving.
Yeah, it keeps being like, oh, no, it's almost there. It's like, no, it's fucking not.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can see that the guy's going the other direction and it won't let you cancel.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm not criticizing the hardworking delivery workers who are overworked and underpaid, but I'm certainly criticizing the infrastructure that leads to me not getting enough sleep because I'm waiting for my Nando's.
It was my first time having Nando's, and it turns out that Nando's is really fucking good.
I'm a fan of Nando's.
My Nando's was fine, although it had been sitting for 2 hours.
You should have just gone there, like me. It was right around the corner.
Well, yeah, clearly I should have, but I was like, well, this will be so easy because I'll hop in the shower, and then once I get out, it'll be here, and it certainly was not.
Mm-mm. I don't trust Uber Eats in, like, other countries. I've had too many bad experiences.
No, I need to stop trusting them. It's happened to me a lot.
I just got an email.
From Nando's?
No, some person whose email signature includes a legal advisor has sent me 7 paragraphs on why he didn't like Toby and I's interpretation of the blindfolded item matching challenge in episode 2.
What?
What? What's his logic? I thought that's pretty uncontroversial.
I haven't seen any disputes of that one.
Let's break this down.
I'm very curious.
I don't know how much I should call out this person anonymously, but the main 2 points are retail store. Now, while called Apple Retail, their store and their products are extremely unique and quite obvious. Yeah, that's why we went there. 2, examine it blindfolded. Nowhere on your little pop-ups did it say that you could literally deconstruct the packaging. This shouldn't have been done and was an extremely unfair decision to allow it. The whole point is to be slightly difficult, and unboxing and getting your hands on a MagSafe charger could really not be easier. Yeah.
Here's the thing about when people do that, and it's like, I know there's some nuance to this, but like my sort of stock response, other than I think those points aren't good, is just like, look, man, we wrote the challenge. So like, we know what we meant. Like, we were there, we did it. Like, it's sort of like, I mean, not to compare us to the founding fathers, but it's like the Supreme Court is always out here like interpreting the Constitution. This is like if the founding fathers who wrote the Constitution were like, we meant this. And somebody was like, I don't think that's what you meant. I don't think that's what it says.
This email goes on to argue that our steal was too easy, y'all steals was too hard. And it's very unfair that it was randomly allocated that way.
Well, the thing about the Brisbane steal, a lot of people are very upset about the Brisbane science steal. And the thing about it is that mathematically, it was a 3-in-8 chance. It's just that you guys were smart about it. And everybody's like, well, it's so obvious how to do it. And it's like, I don't know. It wasn't obvious to me when I wrote the challenge.
Well, to be honest, it was not obvious to any of us when we wrote the challenge. Like, I didn't think of that when, you know, we reviewed the challenges. it was only in the moment.
Yeah.
It's like once you get into it and you start to game it, you're like, oh, this is what I should do. But I think the big thing is that that challenge ended up feeling lame because you were originally supposed to physically hide behind one of the letters and then you couldn't. And so then I think it just made the whole thing feel a little...
But also another point that is a more genuine point about these sorts of critiques is like, okay, maybe one steal is kind of easy, but it was randomly allocated.
Right.
And that's how these games work, is there are many ways in which you can randomly gain an advantage.
Yeah.
And also you decide whether or not you enter into a contract, and therefore the spread of attractiveness, the spread of expected value for challenges in this game is different, is varied.
And it's interpretable. It's highly interpretable based on how you perceive the risk. It's like, if I hadn't thought of that strategy, I might have thought that my odds were bad. Because again, it's 3 out of 8. It's worse than half if you just do it randomly.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know.
Anyways, moving on. Not to call out one specific person, but it kind of hits on just like, I mean, critiques sometimes read like, oh, the game didn't go the way that I wanted it to go, and the people who I don't want...
Women. Okay, now we're just getting too general. I think there are lots of legitimate critiques of the game.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I agree that, if we had thought about it more, the Brisbane challenge, that sign challenge, maybe it was too easy. Like, I think if we had really thought it through, we might have realized, oh, there's an intuitive way to kind of, like, lock this in.
For sure.
But, oh well. You can't win them all.
Anyways, take a chill pill. That's the conclusion.
What was happening? The cart. Oh, it's the next morning. It's the next morning. It's the beginning of day two.
Three.
Day three.
There were balloons and shit.
Yeah, that was nice.
There were balloons?
In Canberra.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That was beautiful. That was crazy.
In the show. Yeah.
That was so nice. Yeah.
Well, it's also the thing that, like, very much does not come through on camera.
Yeah.
Very well.
They only, like, fly around sunrise.
It's one of our toughest mornings. You guys had a lovely, lovely view.
Yeah.
We had a lovely view.
We had a rough go of it.
Yeah.
And you had such a beautiful shot. Like, that background was beautiful, and, like, the lighting was really good on Toby.
Oh, yeah. Not me.
Because you were just shooting a shot of her. You weren't in the shot for most of it with the balloons.
Oh, yeah. That was purposeful. I know my cinematography. If you want to compress
the
background.
No, I know. It looked really nice.
You want to compress the background, really nice. You go telephoto, you go further away. That's also why Toby was like,
nice.
What? Because I was standing really far away and she couldn't hear me.
Oh, it looked great.
And there was like a water blaster in the background cleaning the stairs.
Yeah.
I was like, we should shoot like this more because it looked so good.
Mm-hmm. You should. The further you can get away, the more it will compress the background, the more bouquet you'll get. Anyways, so that morning was stressful. And I didn't expect it to be. I thought it was going to be chill.
Mm.
Well, the Vegemite trap seemed...
Yeah, that went fine, yeah.
That's the one I've been losing sleep over, because I feel like that challenge, I hate that you wrote it and I hate that we did it, because I feel like we terrorized a creature for nothing better than the purpose of earning imaginary coins in a game, but I...
But you freed them.
Can I ask that question? Because Sam claims on camera that you're going to save the bug.
We did.
Did you save the bug?
We released it.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that it did survive, although I think it did get terrorized by the ordeal, and I do feel bad about what we did.
I agree in spirit, I guess.
I agree that ultimately watching it, I was like, we didn't think through the vibe of that you're just going into an ant's natural habitat and messing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do hate that, and it's like... You know, if there's an ant in my kitchen, which happens quite often, I can get rid of the ant in the kitchen, but it's like for a purpose. The fact that we're on this game and we're kind of doing it for this fun game, it just feels different.
I think it's because it was a big ant. I think if it was a little ant, you wouldn't feel anything. It was a big, meaty ant.
Yeah, you could see it kind of squealing.
That's what I said. Yeah. I said that to Sam. You hear me say, let's go find some smaller ants. It's because I felt, first of all, that it would be harder to trap the big ant because it could like jump over more stuff. But I also felt that the little ants were like more acceptable in a way, like tiny ones.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the idea behind this challenge when we wrote it was that like people use Vegemite as a bug trap. And we were like, well, that'll be a fun Vegemite challenge. But yeah, I would agree. We did not fully think through how it would feel to go out into nature and set up a trap for an ant.
Hmm.
But ultimately, the Vegemite ended up not seemingly being that effective as a bait.
No.
At least for the ants. we had a very particular design, very well thought out design. You know, we are true engineers. I mean, we've used brilliant.org, you know, our science. But so ultimately our moat system did its purpose, but it did not seem that the ants were attracted by the Vegemite in the slightest. So I do wonder, because what is it normally for? It's for flies? Yeah, it's for flies.
For flies, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I also will say you did resort to a kind of horrifying and medieval style of trap. You could have just sort of put some Vegemite in a jar and trapped the bug in there.
Listen, the medieval people knew how to trap people and animals, and they got their techniques figured out.
Oh, God.
But I mean, you succeeded. There can be no doubt that you did it.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in that editing. I mean, we'll get to what happened with me and Ben, but there's a lot of stuff that Ben did that was very clever when he edited that, where I don't know if people will pick up on it, but Ben, do you
want to? I want credit for this. Did people notice this? Let me know. Tell me on social media.
Wait.
Notice what?
Ben, what are we supposed to notice?
The poetic ironies woven seamlessly throughout the ending of this episode.
Oh, you're using your literary arts major.
I'm using my literary arts degree.
So Ben is being really opaque about what he's talking about, but basically there's all this stuff where you're like, are they trapped? Are they trapped? And then it cuts to us in a really bad situation trying to get out of it.
And it's like, are we trapped? Do you get it, Sam?
Yeah. And it's like, are we trapped?
No, Ben, I promise that was 100% clear to me from the get-go.
You gotta watch for the edits. I'm always doing stuff. There's a lot of cuts that I'm proud of in this, where we say we're gonna burn your territory to the ground. And then Sam goes, do you want some water?
That's pretty good. This is art that we're making. And you have to come on this podcast to learn maybe how to interpret the art, but it's like getting an art history degree, you know?
Yeah.
There's fun stuff in the Amy's questions thing. She goes like, okay, question three. And then it hard cuts to us going, why are there two airports in Melbourne? And then it goes through and we talk about how you have to answer a troll's riddles. And we're like, you have to answer the troll's riddles. And then it cuts directly to Amy asking you a question.
I noticed that one. Yeah. Some of them are good.
I hope the Emmys voters are listening. I'm sure they all watch on Nebula and then listen to the Companion podcast.
They better.
They better be.
They freaking better be. Anyway. We got way ahead of ourselves. You do the Vegemite. We do the train thing.
We do the train thing.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Oh, my God.
No, it wasn't that funny because how could we have known?
It sucked for us.
That's what makes it so funny. But anyway, it's like literally the worst way it could go wrong, it went wrong.
Yeah.
We were so locked in. Like, we observed, what, like four different trains? They all stop in the same place.
That's what makes it hilarious. You did it completely right and still...
Some random train.
We were so locked in. And then it was our last chance. We had to go just completely different design of train. Just a completely different train car shows up.
Yeah. We should give credit. This challenge was inspired by an episode of... I always forget who.
Hamish and Andy.
Okay, not Jono and Ben.
Train door expert video.
Jono and Ben is New Zealand. Hamish and Andy are Australia.
Yes.
Got it. We'll never remember.
Yeah. And we actually intended to do this at the same platform where they did it, but it turned out they didn't do this at Flinders Street Station. They did it at the other station that I forget the name of.
Yeah, we messed up. We can acknowledge here that I thought the Skybus went to Flinders Street.
Yeah.
So I kind of confused the two stations, to be honest.
You came in with such confidence. You were like, oh, Melbourne, I know the spot. It's Flinders Street Station.
Well, the truth is, Flinders Street, I think, in some ways was correct because it's way more scenic. The front of it is?
It is. It is. It did look nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And I believe it's a little bit more iconic.
Southern Cross is the one that the bus goes to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I intended Flinders Street, but I forgot that the bus didn't go there conveniently, basically.
Yeah. Oh, well. So that sucked that that happened. Really frustrating.
It was very funny. Not only was it very funny in the moment, it was extra funny watching it. And I acknowledge that that must have sucked.
Well, because your experience of it, because it happened so fast, it was like Steel initiated, and then 30 seconds later, Steel failed.
Yeah,
we didn't even know.
Well, yeah, we didn't even notice that our budget was locked up in the slightest. It was just like, oh, they tried, they're done. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty frustrating. Yeah. And also pretty frustrating that you were taking so long to do the bug thing that we couldn't even like be playing for a good amount of money.
Mm-mm. I love the cuts of me just having a nice little snack. We're looking at ants and y'all are like, please hurry up.
Well, the context of that too, which I don't think is super clear, is like Questacon didn't open for a while. So you guys just weren't in a hurry to do the ants thing. You were just kind of like, we have to wait for Questacon anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, we were taking our merry time.
Sweet time looking at those ants.
So anyways, I mean, honestly, a lot of the viewing experience for me in the episode was juicy. I think it's worth reminding anyone who might be hating me right now, I've had to suffer through a lot.
You've suffered a lot. No, you get to enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
It's an interesting moment around this time, which is that both the teams have almost exactly the same amount of money, despite getting there from very different random paths. Like around this point, I think we both have like $1,400. And I just find that so kind of surprising that it's like, yeah, despite all our failings and wins, we like are kind of equal with the other team right now.
Yeah.
So then y'all have a little bit of airport issues.
Yes.
Okay.
Classic.
Well,
we went into this morning
so confident.
As Toby's saying, I felt like perfectly head to head. Like, we were feeling really good, you guys were feeling really good, and it was, like, truly anybody's game. And then it fell apart for us so quickly.
So fast. Kind of like the last morning. We had two really bad mornings in a row.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, look, because I do remember it had come up so briefly, like, the night before. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, there's a second airport in Melbourne. Because I think we had discussed when we talked about setting the challenge board, it had mentioned like, oh, there's another one. And I just didn't think much of it. What can I say? I think that that one was my fault, Ben. I think I booked that flight. So I think it was on me that I didn't notice which airport.
I shan't say. Every decision is a team decision, Adam.
That's true.
It's true. In fairness, we obviously never went through with it, but it is confusing how it comes up in Google Flights because like 99% of the flights are via Melbourne. Yeah. On the one hand, y'all do live in a city with three different airports.
Yeah, but it's not like a Newark, JFK, LaGuardia thing where there's a split. It's like almost everything is out of Melbourne.
Yeah, Avalon Airport is basically highly obscure. You know, Charles de Gaulle to Paris Beauvais situation, which is maybe not a reference that people will get. But like in many ways, how like a lot of European cities have like the major airport. And then there's like the airport that Ryanair goes to that is like pretty far away and is much cheaper. It's kind of like that situation. And Avalon is served, I believe, just by Jetstar, AirAsia X, and what is it, Bonza?
Yeah, Bonza.
They went bankrupt.
Yeah, they did.
It was a weird airline that didn't even show up in schedules and you had to like book on their app or something. It was confusing.
Yeah, a niche budget airline that existed for a hot minute and no longer exists.
Yeah. I believe they had their airplanes repossessed. This is the story. Mm. They didn't just like stop operations. They got their airplanes repoed.
That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Anyways, so that's obviously tough because not only have you lost a lot of time, you've lost a lot of money. Well, not a lot of money, a good bit of money.
Not a lot. At least the flight to Sydney was very cheap. But what it meant was that like a lot of things were suddenly going very badly because we never would have, not never, but I don't know if we would have attempted that steal, or at a minimum, we would have like done other things afterwards if we didn't think we already had a flight booked. We were like, well, we can do the steal because it's all good because we have a flight booked already. So we'll go to a new place and we'll have new challenges, et cetera, et cetera. So we were like, whatevs, let's try it. Because we, it turned out, didn't have a flight booked and then had lost all that money from the failed steal, we were very unexpectedly in this situation where it was like, we don't have enough money to get out of here in a way that's comfortable. It was like all the flights to Sydney were much more expensive. Most of them didn't leave at good times. And it was like, if we go to Sydney too, it's like, we don't get a welcome bonus. That's the thing. Like the welcome bonuses were starting to dry up. So we were starting to realize like, we're actually now suddenly in a deeply bad situation. And then the realization was, really the only thing to do was to go to Alice Springs because that was one of the only places with a good flight, which we had looked at. You see us in the morning, look at it, where we could get a welcome bonus. And the thing is, that flight was, I think, like $800 and some, but with a $750 welcome bonus, functionally, the flight becomes like $80. And it was like, well, that's the cheapest flight we're going to get anywhere, right? And so it was like, we kind of had no choice.
Yeah, and some other interesting context is like, Alice Springs has like 2 to 4 flights a day total.
Not a lot, no.
From the entire country.
Yes.
So like the fact that the timing lined up, the prices lined up, everything lined up was a very like unlikely set of circumstances that led to y'all being in Alice Springs.
Yes.
Well, I would not say that everything lined up, because the reason that we originally didn't want to go there was because we had no way out for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And we did not think that it was a good idea to commit to just one region for that whole day. But that is ultimately what we have to do. And we cannot leave Alice Springs until the following day.
Well, the thing is, there was a flight like an hour and a half after we would have landed that would have gone to Adelaide that we would have been able to just barely afford with the welcome bonus, which we had talked about that morning. But the thing was, at that point in the game, we would have showed up in Adelaide with, I think, like $150 or something, like maybe a little more, but $200 maybe. And we wouldn't have gotten a welcome bonus. And it was like, you don't ever want to be at like $200 in this game. So to us, it just wasn't really an option.
Yeah.
So we just had to hard commit to Alice Springs.
You just had to lock it in.
I'm certainly excited to see what you get up to in Alice Springs, because that's footage I haven't seen any of yet. So it's
going
to be nice to see. I have no idea what you guys did there.
Did a lot of stuff.
Alice Springs, I mean, we'll talk about it next episode, but I've been there when I lived in Australia. It's a...
It's a harsh climate, I'll say.
Yeah, it's a harsh climate. The bugs, the flies.
The flies are nuts.
A lot. Also, being there as an American is kind of weird, because what Alice Springs is largely known for, not entirely known for, is the CIA facility just outside of it. The American CIA facility called... Oh, wait, I'm forgetting.
Pine Gap.
Pine Gap, yeah.
Pine Gap.
It's a signals intelligence facility that apparently has done some very sketchy stuff.
Mm-mm.
And a lot of Australians, rightly so, I'll say, are not completely pleased with the relationship between Australia and the U.S. military and the U.S. intelligence, you know, stuff. And yeah, Pine Gap is like the sketchiest of sketchiest U.S. government facilities.
Mm.
And there's a lot of Americans, therefore, living in Alice Springs, working there. And, like, if you meet an American in Alice Springs, like, everyone just assumes you are working there.
Well.
We get Ben and Adam go to Pine Gap next episode.
Mm-hmm. We get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, that didn't go too great for Friendly Geordies. But there's a great video by Boy Boy, Friendly Geordies, and them, basically, where they attempt to go to Pine Gap. But they run into some issues, let's say, with the fuzz.
Great video.
That's understandable. But then, I mean, once that happens, we're pretty much locked up in the air, and the rest of the episode is really kind of all you guys.
Us. Yeah. Questacon.
Oh, we're having another nightmare on our end.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as we got in there, I started to get nervous. And I never really mentioned this on camera, but, like, you know, science museums are kind of always for kids, but this one was, like, really for kids. And that meant that, like, there was barely anything for us to learn. I mean, would you agree, Toby?
Not to sound too arrogant, but we did think that we kind of knew all the basic facts that were on display. So we were just kind of meandering around and having a little bit of fun. And yeah, there were actually hordes of school children in the place at the time. So we were trying to avoid them.
That's part of the reason why we don't have a ton of footage, but yeah.
Look, the questions were not what I expected them to be to some extent.
But we did consciously seek out and identify things that, like, we thought this might make for a good question.
Yeah.
Like, we spent a lot of time studying and memorizing the Nobel Prizes in the lobby.
Yeah, yeah. I talk about Brian Schmidt's one, but you don't see me memorize all the other ones that are mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then we're, like, trying to memorize elements from the periodic table. We were actually trying to study by guessing what we thought the questions would be and memorizing and studying all of that, none of which helped. But at least we got some.
But the vast majority of, like, content in the exhibits was, like, very fundamental science, the kind of thing that you learn in, like, elementary school. And that actually had me nervous while going through it, because it's like, I'm pretty sure this quiz isn't gonna just be about, like, you know, conservation of mass or something.
Momentum.
In Amy's defense about the questions, it's like, she did all of the legwork of, like, actually reaching out to a Questacon employee because she couldn't go to visit the museum.
We don't got the budget for that.
And like that person provided questions to her,
yeah,
which she then correctly assessed seemed hard. And that's why she made it that you could pick 3 out of 5 to answer, which is like a pretty reasonable approach.
Yeah.
It was reasonable. We're not complaining.
Yeah. It just felt like a lot of stress for 1.5x, ultimately.
Well, I think certainly had we known the true difficulty of the quiz, it would not have been a 1.5x.
Yeah. But it was very satisfying for us, like, ultimately how it worked out, that, like, we were able to, like, genuinely experiment our way into an answer. Of course, we didn't get to 100% of an answer, but we got to, like, a strong guesstimate that worked out with the Tower of Brahma / the Tower of Hanoi. That was so satisfying in the moment.
In the end, yes, but I do find it's quite cringe that I have since done it in 15 moves. And what I feel is that at the time, I couldn't do it because my brain was not working and I crumpled under the pressure like a leaf.
You guys were really stressed out.
I was so stressed because imagine this. Imagine you go to like a show with a million people sitting in the audience and you get pulled up on stage and told to solve the Tower of Hanoi in the minimum number of moves with everyone watching you. It's so stressful. And that's how I felt trying to do it on the show, just like what you see. My hands are like shaking as I'm like placing the paper down. I'm so like nervous. Yeah. I couldn't even count. We do it in 18 moves at one point, which I don't think is even possible.
That was definitely my reason too. It was the stress. It was not mental ineptitude.
Well, what was really funny is like, because I edited that section and I was trying to figure out what you were going to do because I didn't know if you would figure it out or not. So I like had to be like, okay, how many moves would it be? I kept expecting you to figure out that it was 15 because I knew you got that challenge correct. And I kept being like, here it comes. They're about to figure it out. They're about to figure it out. They're about to figure it out. And when it got to the point where you were just like, yeah, we can't figure it out, but we think probably we just did it wrong and it's 15. I was...
Well, the logic was sound.
No. Look, your logic was flawless. Your logic was correct. You got the money. You nailed it. I mean, I got to tell you, I would have never in a million years been able to remember what the Tower of Brahma or Hanoi was. So, I mean, I wouldn't have even gotten that far. I'm just saying from an editing perspective, I kept being like, oh, and here they're going to figure out the move is this. And it was just like, no.
When we left and got home, I've since been on YouTube and watched a video of like the minimum moves. And it's like a reaction of like, oh, of course you do that. I think we were doing the same thing over and over again, but forgetting we'd already done it that way because it was just outside of my mental capacity to remember what we'd done the previous attempt.
Is there a way to succinctly describe what we got wrong? Because I didn't look it up after.
It's after the fifth move, I think.
It's very visual. But the key is actually the little piece, the smallest piece, it moves across. So it steps across and then jumps back to the starting point. And then it does that again. So as long as the smallest piece is always moving across and then jumping back to the start, I think you're doing it right.
Okay, interesting. Anyway, so then we managed that crisis and then immediately put ourselves into another one with the portrait gallery.
I'm obsessed with this footage of Toby insisting. She keeps bringing up this guy. What's his name, Toby?
Oh, Ned Kelly?
Ned Kelly.
I'm glad you are here to back me up.
I did not even include every time you mentioned Ned Kelly. Like, I included as many as I could because I thought it was so funny. It's so funny how exasperated you get. It's like one of the only moments where you get exasperated in all the footage. It's when Sam goes like, I don't think people know who Ned Kelly is. And you start to go a little bit under your breath. You just go like, that's not possible.
Ben and Adam, do you know who Ned Kelly is?
I feel bad, but no, I've never heard of Ned Kelly.
Oh, he's like the caricature of an easy to draw Australian hero. And he was like an outlaw. So like he was like in the bush and shooting at people and committing crimes and robberies and like kind of being a villain of some sense, but he's also a hero. And he had like a police shootout at the end and he's wearing this iconic armor over his face and body. And that armor is now like on display in the Melbourne Museum. And it's just very iconic. But look, I guess I shouldn't have projected my knowledge and thoughts of Ned Kelly onto Sam. So I'm sorry for that.
No, but I ultimately agree probably that, like, if you had done it, the Australians would have showed up in the poll and they would have been like, oh, it's Ned Kelly. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much that he's well known. It's that he's easy to draw because he has that helmet he was wearing.
And I do think that the point that you made a good point of emphasizing with our selection is that it is less so who it is and more so how iconic is a certain depiction of said person. And that's why I personally was keen on the queen, because if you just like vaguely do crown that hairstyle and her general shape, I think everyone's first guess would be the Queen of England.
Keen on the Queen would be a good name for like a podcast about the royal family or something.
Okay. Of course, the Queen was not there. Although one thing that unfortunately we never clarified in our challenge design here, and therefore we default to the more restrictive version if we don't clarify something, is they have many, many, many more portraits technically in the collection of the National Portrait Gallery, but not on display.
Gotta see it, baby.
Well, that's what we assumed, but
yeah, because we asked a staff member, do you have the Queen? And he looked it up on the computer and he's like, yeah, it's in the collection, but today it's not on display. And so we were like, I guess it doesn't count.
Stuff.
Because of course, we weren't able to film ultimately, but it was stressful because like everything was like an interesting portrait, like a really like technically interesting portrait of just like rando artist or like self-portrait or something like that. And it was truly maybe three or four in the entire museum of people that I even vaguely knew of.
Wow.
Anyway, so you'll see next episode how we end up attempting this.
I pledge my case to Sam again.
Yep.
I have to convince him on another.
Well, maybe the slight spoiler is that you successfully pitched your case.
Mm-hmm.
We will see whether or not that pans out. But you successfully convinced me that Russell Crowe was not the right option. And I think you were right. I don't even know really who Russell Crowe is. I know he's an actor, but I don't know what he's in.
He's in Gladiator. Okay. He's in stars in a wonderful draw, film though. Called The Nice Guys. No, I think he'd be a terrible choice to draw.
Yeah. Anyways, that's the end of Jet Lag Season 10, Episode 4.
That's true. That's the end.
The layover companion thing. I hope this is better than that other unnamed podcast. It's probably almost certainly not. Those people seem to really know how to do it.
I feel like every single episode of the podcast, you find some way to say that you think the podcast is bad.
This is the best thing we do. This is the real art, Sam.
Really?
This is our best product as a company.
Those people are like seemingly like professional show recapper people.
Technically, we are also professional show recapper people.
As a very small capacity of our jobs. We are professional athletes.
That's true.
That's true. That's the main thing.
At least I am, but
that is the main part of our job.
Anyways, any more things to say?
Ben, would you like to hit us with something?
Yeah, Ben, say something funny.
Bing bong.
There it is. I love it when he does that. That was good.
Yeah, all right. All right, on that note, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
See you. Bye. Bye.